Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airwaves. It's that time again. It's a True North podcast hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend, Billy North out of Seattle, Washington. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, playing a little co-host down here in Los Angeles, where it kind of looks like where Bill is up there in Seattle this last month and a half. Floods, yeah. Rains, tornadoes, you name it, we had it. But that's a story for another day if we want to be weathermen. 347-205-9631 can get you to the front of the line. If you happen to catch the show after with some friends, tell them all about it as you sit around a campfire, most marshmallows and stuff. blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, as I lay that red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic, the threes, Bill. How are you, my brother? How can people get a hold of you? And, boy, you are bringing one of your teammates in this one.
I know that's right. Well, I'm doing pretty good. Teddy was one of my favorite players all of the time. He's a great teammate. You can reach me at BillNorte15@gmail.com. And Teddy, how are you?
I'm good, Billy. Good to hear your voice. Haven't seen you. Looking forward to seeing you at the reunion.
I know. Isn't that going to be something?
It's going to be good, yeah. I don't know how many guys are going to come, but I don't know who's left.
Yeah, man, we lost a couple of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good to see everybody again, you know.
Yeah, it's always a joy, you know, and listen to those lies that have grown and grown and grown and grown. Teddy, I'm going to start you out with this. I want you to expound on the greatness of the dynasty of the Oakland A's. I saw an article, and it was about the greatest dynasties of all time in all sports, and we were number 14. And that's pretty high cotton, the little boy from Seattle, Washington, standing in center field for one of the greatest dynasties of all time. What do you think was the reason why we were great?
Well, I'll tell you something, and I know we've talked about some things before. I spent 11 years in that organization, and when we went through those 3 years of winning like that, I have never seen a team that had the same commitment, the same dedication, the same way of going on the field day after day for those years, and it was for 5 years. You know, they won the title. Five or 6 years, nothing changed. The commitment that they had, and you know, there's all kinds of rumors. Is it Finley? You know, is everybody so mad at Finley that that was the reason that they just played so hard? I personally think, when I look back at it, and I've said this last year at the reunion, we had a question and answer period. Club had 25 players that were individual stars in their own right. They were committed. Nobody needed anybody to really spur anybody on. The question was asked, you know, how did we stay playing that well? You know, who was the inspiration? Well, I didn't think there was. Even if you look at Reggie, Reggie kind of did his thing. Nobody really, I mean, we paid attention to him, but we let him do his own thing. But 25 guys knew what their jobs were. We didn't have the best players overall, I think you'll agree, but they played the game as good as probably anybody could for a long time.
I used to like to say my job as a center fielder was to pick up the ball and throw it to the nearest person coming out of the infield.
Exactly. That's how they played.
And then I had finished my job.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that worked for us.
Well, that was like, in, you know, when we played the Dodgers and they, who was it? Buckner was on first, I think. Somebody hit the ball to right. Reggie got it, threw it to Greeny, and Greeny hit Bando. I mean, he was out by 10 feet.
Well, that was actually he was batting, and he hit the ball in the right center field, and the ball took a bad hop and went over my glove. And Reggie had backed me up, which was sometimes shaky, but he was there, and it was a perfect – he hit Campaneris, Campaneris hit Bando, and Bando was, I would say, maybe a fourth of the way to second base when Buckner was trying to slide into third and he had the ball.
Yeah, I mean, he was dead out. I mean, I was in the dugout at the time, and as soon as I saw Buckner around second, he was not going to stop. I said, he's out.
It was the first out of the inning, too. But and my other question was, I had a quote, and it said, Tony La Russa said, I always thought Kubiak was the most valuable player on that team because he could fill in for Dick Green at second or Campaneris at short or Sal Bando at third, and the team would go on winning.
Well, that was very nice of Tony to say that. And
that was kind of my sentiments also, is that when they got rid of you, when you left, I said, there goes. That's the dismantling of the machine. What do you think about that?
Well, you know what? We talked about this, and there's something else that I didn't tell you. When we went to spring training that year, 1975, I told you earlier the commitment that these guys had and the dedication. Every time we'd go to spring training, I could see that. They were ready to play. Something was not right in 1975. I still remember attending, going to spring training, the daily workouts that we had. There was something not right with the team. They were disoriented. Something was wrong, and it was very, very evident. Now, were we burned out after winning so often? I don't know, but maybe it was because free agency had started or was going to be starting. I don't know. But anyway, so that's what I saw in spring training. Then we go to Shea Stadium, and I get the phone call from Finley. He calls me off the field, and he tells me he's trading me to San Diego. And Billy, not to blow smoke at myself, but I felt the same way. I said, the guy, he's breaking up the club.
He's breaking up the club.
And he got Sonny Siebert for me as a pitcher. And Sonny was a good pitcher, no doubt. But he didn't do much to help the team, I don't think.
He was a fourth starter, and then they ran him out of the bullpen. But he had been a starter most of his career.
But, I felt the team breaking up there myself. It's interesting that you felt it. I don't know if anybody else did. Maybe everybody did. I don't know.
Well, go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry.
No, more or less, when you look at that, Ted, the breakup of the team, and, when you look at the age, and Bill brought up an interesting thing, when you guys are rated number 14 in dynasties, I like to know. I probably can throw two in there as far as the rest of these teams, but if it's not the Yankees and the Reds in there, I don't know who else is better than you, because I more or less thought you guys put Oakland in the state of California on the map when you guys came out here. Nothing to take away from the Dodgers and the Giants, but you won three titles in a row, and, the colorful uniforms, the cheapness of Charlie Finley, the white shoes. I mean, it's hard to top that. Any thoughts?
Well, it's hard to say why we didn't get the accolades that I think we probably should have gotten or should get. But whether it was Finley, the arguments we had, the fact that maybe we were on the West Coast and not
I think that was
one of the big hub cities, not New York, Chicago, or wherever. But it's just what happened. I don't know what the real explanation is. Everybody has their own ideas, but I definitely think we should be up there. I mean, two or three clubs have won three in a row. The Yankees won five in a row, I know, in the 50s. But there's not a lot of
– Only one other club won three in a row, and that was
And when you try to repeat, I mean, repeating is very difficult. And Billy,
really?
You know, you were there for a couple of years anyway, Billy. That team, you know, it's like I said before, that team knew when we went on the field, we were going to win. We were going to win. I don't know how to explain it.
I'll tell you this. I'm sorry, Mark. I'll tell you this, though. It's a kind of thing that one thing that I've noticed in sports, when you have a team that was constructed like we were and led by a guy like Dick Williams, a lot of teams that get to be championships and repeating that, and change managers,
right?
It will carry the ethic and the power of the team will carry on for 1 year,
right?
And after that, then it starts to shake apart. But we played the game without having to be managed.
That's a great point. That is a great point right there.
Right.
That's what I was talking about before. Everybody knew how to play the game, and everybody did play the game. We didn't need Dick to be there. Dick just kind of steered the ship, you know. And even when Alvin took over in 75 or whatever it was, I mean, he didn't do that much, I don't think, to help the club. I wasn't there, of course, but I played for Alvin in 67, and I didn't think Alvin was that great a manager. But that team was able to play. You know, it's very hard to put a team together and say it's going to win. Look at the money that team spent. Look at the money the Yankees have spent over the years in trying to put a team together. You can't.
Right.
You don't know when a team is going to be good or not. You know, I don't care what kind of players you get. You don't know how they're going to mesh. You don't know what the charisma is going to be like. You don't know what they're going to do when they get together.
Right.
It's just hit and miss, really.
Well, let me ask you, Ted. I mean, you not only playing for the A's and winning with the A's, I'm going to throw these other teams out that you played with, and you played with probably some pretty good players, if I can recollect my memory on this. The Brewers, when you were there, you basically held the most RBIs in a game. It's been equaled by eight others, but if I can recall, I think that was a team with George Scott on it.
No, he was there.
Okay, so St. Louis, you must have played with Bob Gibson there.
Oh, that was those great, you know, great Gibson and Brock and Torrey. I mean, Joe Torrey, my locker was next to Joe Torrey. Joe Torrey hit 360 that year, and the man could not run a lick.
Could not run a lick.
Yeah, look at the Rangers with Ferguson Jenkins, I would imagine, and the Padres with the Gaylord Perry and all those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky to play with a lot of really good players, but like I said, you never know how they're going to mesh. You never know how they're going to work together. I mean, the Cardinal team, you know, the Pirates beat us. We could not catch the Pirates the year that I was with the Cardinals, and I wasn't there that long. But we wound up by 4 games behind them. We just couldn't catch the Pirates.
And it was a division, if I remember, dominated by the Pirates and the Phillies in that decade of the 70s. I mean, when you look at it, if I recall, because, you know, it seemed like if one wasn't winning, the other one was winning, then you had the Mets in this mix, too.
Well, the
Cincinnati Reds.
The Phillies used to beat us up in San Diego. I mean, the Phillies, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, they'd score 10 runs a game against us. You know, the only time we'd win was when Randy Jones pitched. You know, but those were good teams. I mean, that Cincinnati team in 75 and 76, that's one of the best teams I've seen.
Yeah. That's basically, and you look at, you know, when you look at the Padres, and I started radio down in San Diego, I'm kind of partial to the Padres as far as, you know, giving me a chance down there. But when you sit back in a chair and recollect and playing for the team, you can't help but notice these days, I mean, they're loaded for bear. Any thought to that? And then I'll give it back over to Bill.
You know, but like I say, let's see what happens. You know, they've got the horses, but is it going to work? That's the question. Nobody knows.
A lot of good things that have to happen to win a World Series. A lot throughout the season. A whole bunch of stuff has to happen. There's no easy way. Yeah.
Well, they've already,
right.
You know, you've got to keep your guys healthy for the most part, I think. But you've
always, yeah.
You've got to have guys that, I use the term winners. How do you explain a winner, Billy? How do you explain a winner? You don't know. You know if you see one.
I'll tell you this, though, Teddy. Winning is infectious. Losing is insidious.
Yeah.
When you have players on the bench on a winning team, they're called role players.
Yeah.
When they're on a losing team, they're called they're not happy.
Right.
And they
right.
don't think that they could do the job of the guy that's in front of them. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, Ted. What makes a good manager? Now we've had Dusty Baker on this show. We saw his illustrious career as a player, and it carried over to a manager, and he finally got the World Series last year. But you, 25 years managing, what do you bring to the players when you're managing those kind of guys? With your experience, and I've talked about this before with a football coach. I think what ends up happening, you have some guys that buy into the system, they absorb it like a sponge. Others have their own way of doing things. They kind of tune it out. But as long as you stay consistent with the message, I think that's 75% of getting this thing worked to the way you want to. Am I on to something on that?
Well, I'll tell you this. When I began managing, I thought I knew what I was doing. Now, I never managed any place. Billy, I learned very quickly that I had no idea what it was like. The first time I ever managed a professional team, I took over the AAA team in Tacoma for the A's. Carl Peel sent me up there because Brad Fisher was going home. His wife was having a baby, right? So Carl calls me up and he says, go up there for a couple of days and fill in. Billy, I never managed anything. I'm standing on the dugout steps the very first night, and Chuck Estrada was my pitching coach. I looked out on the field and I said literally to myself, I don't think I can do this. There is so much you have to see and so much you got to be aware of. It took me probably 10 years before I really felt comfortable managing.
Yeah.
And I learned every single day. One really telltale time that really hit me was the day that I realized I could not play the game for the players. I used to live with the game. I used to live with the players. Until I taught myself that all I can do is prepare them, and then I send them out there and I do my thing with them on the field. Then I started to relax and I learned how to deal with the players. I learned how to use my coaching staff. I learned how to deal with them. I considered myself a player's manager. Mm-hmm. I was on their side all the time, but I had no problem jumping in there, jumping on them if they did something wrong. They knew I was fair. I think they knew that I was going to be on their side. So I think that helped, I think I did okay. I won over 1,000 games in my career, so.
Yeah, and I've been around Baker a lot in that, and he's been in the game like you. I mean, 50 years, you were in there 40 plus. But it's the kind of thing that there is so many things happening, especially in the big leagues. There's so many things, so many dynamics around the Major League Baseball team and the players. And to be a manager, you got to be a mom, you got to be a dad, you got to be an uncle, and every player brings something different.
You know what I think, Billy, and that's probably what Dusty does and all the good managers do. they have earned the respect of their players, and they can tell them when they're doing something, you know, that's not right.
Right.
They know that, you know. But if you don't have the their respect, you're not going to get any respect. No way.
Yeah, I've been there.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Ted. Take us through an experience you had playing Major League Baseball, or maybe it was the minors when you were down there for 6 years. Take us through an experience where it had to be the most funniest moment that you came across, or maybe it was, you know, getting your debut or something, the fans, what city, did anything? You know, I remember the late Jay Johnstone I had this conversation with, and Jay would tell me, he said, the funniest experience I ever had was when we were in Montreal, and I'm on a carriage going downtown Montreal with Steve Garvey and everybody, and I'm yelling out of the carriage, the Yankees are coming, the Yankees are coming.
Oh, God.
Yeah, you're talking about somebody that was a half a turn off, Jay Johnstone.
You know,
he was a work of art. Yeah.
The great thing about the Oakland A's teams, this is not my minor league, but in the big leagues, I just used to love the bus rides. Billy, you probably remember. They just got old.
Getting off the plane and getting in the bus and going to the hotel. Boy, you couldn't be thin-skinned.
Oh, my God. I remember laughing so hard at guys getting angry at each other and almost fighting each other because of what they were doing. But you know, my time in the minor leagues, I struggled in the minor leagues. It was a tough road for me. One year I did okay, then I was lousy, then I did okay, then it was lousy. But, you know, one of the funniest things, and that's not maybe not a good time to bring this up, but, you know, we just lost Sal Bando, of course. He just passed away. And I don't know, Billy, if you were there. I don't really remember what year this happened, but we're playing in Fenway Park, right? And Bando's on first. I don't know who was hitting, but they hit a fly ball in left field. And Yastrzemski made it look like it was going to, you know, hit the wall. So he off the wall. Well, with one out, Sal thought, okay, I'm going, you know. He takes off. He rounds second. Yastrzemski turns around and catches the fly ball.
He could play that wall, boy.
That was almost at third base, right? So throwing it to first to double Sal up. What do you think Sal does? He knows he's got to get back to first. Well, the shortest between 2 points is a straight line. He runs across the mound.
Yeah. I think I remember that.
Oh, my God. He panicked. The dugout broke up. I mean, we were struggling at the time. It kind of broke the ice a little bit, but I don't know.
Ted and Bill, I can just imagine, I mean, and I love this, both of them dearly. I mean, I can remember, you know, when I think of relief pitchers, I Raleigh Fingers comes to mind. He's way up there in my top five. But I can just imagine Raleigh Fingers and Reggie Jackson in a bus. I mean, it seemed like two dual personalities to some, more or less, because am I on to something on there? Because I could just imagine Reggie, you know, being the star of the party there and coming in there, and Raleigh being more studious and stuff. Any thoughts of those two?
Raleigh being
I don't know where you got studious from.
Oh, that mustache. Maybe the mustache made it look like that.
That made him look like a professor, but that was about it, you know.
Yeah, Kenny Holtzman used to make him the class clown.
Kenny Holtzman and Raleigh Fingers were at each other, I mean, constantly. You know, Fingers was on Holtzman because, Kenny was on Fingers for the number of times he got married. You know, Kenny, they just never let each other up. I mean, it was amazing.
It was all in good fun. Yeah.
Guys, it didn't matter what was going on off the field. That team got on the field, and, I mean, it just buckled down. It was amazing.
Well, let me ask you both this. And the last time I was in Fenway Park, I got to go back to when Billy Martin was managing the A's, when he had Mike Norris and Langford and all those guys. but Dick Williams seemed to be more of a common effect with you guys in that nice run to win all those championships. What if Billy Martin was running those title runs? Would that have been the same? Would you guys have more or less continued to win it, or would this have been a dynamite keg ready to blow up?
My own look at Billy Martin is that he was good for a young team. He'd be good for a year, and then as soon as he started putting pressure on guys, and guys would get some years under their belt, they didn't want to listen to him anymore. Now,
yeah,
I don't
right.
know what it was like. Never played for him, okay? Now, Dick was fair. You know, I never had Dick say anything to me. I don't know if he did to you, Billy, but
yeah,
I know
he twice. Players, yeah.
But he had the respect of everybody. He was the same look every day, day in and day out. And I think he was just a calming effect from that standpoint. But I don't, you know, Billy Martin, I
wouldn't have worked.
Billy Martin, I don't
right.
know.
He wouldn't. One player he wouldn't have had would have been me. But it's a kind of thing that Dick taught us how to play the game.
Right, right.
And what he hated most is for us to give up an extra out.
Yeah, yeah.
He said if you do that three times a game, they hit 10 innings and you hit 9.
Yeah.
And
wow.
The game was made to be played a particular way. As far as off the field, he pulled me out of more than one fire, but he always treated us like men.
Yeah.
But he was a hard man.
Yeah.
You know, he was not a good manager on a middle of the road team or a losing team, because he wanted the game to be played perfectly, and he knew that it couldn't be played perfectly, but we were the closest thing to being that team that he wanted that you could imagine. Great manager, gave me my first job.
There's not a lot of managers that you can really say were really good managers. And, you know, there's all kinds that come through the turnstiles, but there's very few of them. You know, somebody like Dusty that's hanging around like that. You know, Bochy's back in the game now.
Bochy's a good manager, too.
And we're down to less than 2 minutes here. I got to know Bochy, covering him for 3 years in San Diego, and man, oh man, what a gentleman that guy is. And you know, the Tony Gwynns and you know, all those guys down there and stuff. But Bochy, I think Bochy will do wonders in Texas. He turned the Giants, and he turned Padres, and I really think watch out, the Rangers are on the cusp of doing something great.
Yeah.
Bill, as we wrap this thing up, any final thoughts with Ted? And, boy, we could talk for hours. I mean, each and every week we keep getting the best of the best of your buddies coming through here. And, man, oh, man, I know that the XM guys the other day said, Billy's got to come on the XM show over here. And I said, yeah, anything you guys want, man. But I'm just so blessed to do this each and every week with you, my friend.
Thank you so much, Mark. And thank you, Teddy. You know, we were always pretty good with each other, and I just appreciated you and having the experience that we had together.
Well, it's nice to know the teammates that I had, you know, you being one of them, of course. But we lived through some special times, Billy, so don't forget it.
Yeah, how can you?
Special times.
How can you? That's what you know what?
Yep.
We got to go to the mountaintop together.
Yep.
And
exactly.
if you don't want to be a world champion more than you want anything in the game, you're not much of a player.
Nope. Yep. You're right.
I like
you're
that
right.
thought.
Right.
And on that
right.
note, Bill, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you.
Bill Norte 15 at gmail.com. Hit me up, fans. I appreciate it.
Yep, Chad, we'd like to do this again with you. Anytime the carpet's laid out for you, my friend, we can get into more of the manager things and more in depth, man. 30 minutes goes by quick, but I appreciate your time, my friend.
Anytime, anytime. Thank you guys very much for your time.
Thank you
well,
so much.
That's Chad Kubiak. That's Bill North. I'm Mark Mancini. We'll talk to you next week. Same time, same channel across the airwaves, more or less. And catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Have a blessed night, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
All right. Thank you.